From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter. Made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album. Available on iTunes.
I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome to The Art of the Matter. This week, we'll talk to one of the APA fellows and get the latest from musician and composer Tyron Cooper. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. On today's show, we'll check in with composer-performer Tyron Cooper and learn about the ISO's collaboration with Ball State University. But first, a flashback. If you attended Dance Kaleidoscope performances during the 1990s, the name Ricardo Melendez will instantly bring pictures of an extraordinary talent to mind. Ricardo was featured not only in modern dance tour de force pieces like Carmina Burana, but he also had a parallel career in Indianapolis as an actor, starring in productions like Nijinsky's Last Dance. Fast forward to today, Ricardo is one of the directors of Todd Rosenlieb Dance. The Virginia-based company is bringing three pieces to the stage at the IRT in April as part of DK and Friends. I invited Ricardo to catch us up on his life since his departure from Indy and to give us a sneak preview of DK and Friends.
Ricardo, there are people in Indianapolis who still haven't forgiven you for leaving.
Oh, it's going to be so fantastic to be back.
Remind us where you went after you left Dance Kaleidoscope and what year was that?
Oh, my God. I believe it was 2000. Yes, it was 2000. I went back to New York to finish my master's in theater. And then I worked for a while in the city. Eventually got called from Ballo de San Juan in Puerto Rico. And Doña Ana Garcia, she was retiring. She was the founder of the national company in Puerto Rico. And she said, I want you to direct a company. Would you be interested?
That is such a high honor.
I know. Wow. So obviously I could not say no.
No.
So I moved to Puerto Rico in, I believe that was 2002, to start the season of 2003. I had a great time there. I was able to not only strengthen the company for the 50th anniversary at that time, but also we traveled through Europe. We did what we call the Puerto Rican Communities Concert, which was New York, Chicago, Miami, of course.
Sure.
Then after I had signed for 2 years to take the company to their 50th anniversary, stayed a little bit longer. And the opportunity to come here to Norfolk, Virginia, appeared. Todd Rosenlieb, my partner, he had been here for a few years, and there was an interest from a private donor who wanted to create a space where, you know, dance was the lifeline. And she said, well, if you two gentlemen run it, I'll build it.
Oh my gosh, another once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Correct. So obviously that was the big change, and we've been here, the Rosenlieb Dance Center, it's celebrating its 12th year now. Cannot believe that.
Time flies when you're having fun and making great dance.
Yes, and so I worked as assistant director for the longest time until the city asked us to take Virginia Ballet Theater, the Hampton Roads professional ballet company, under our name, under TR Dance.
Hmm.
So then I become director of Virginia Ballet Theater and assistant artistic director for the TR Dance Center. And that's where we've been for the last 6 years.
What are you seeing change? Are there changes in the way we prepare up-and-coming dancers based on maybe new information about sports medicine, new technologies, or
yes.
Or has nothing changed?
No, it's changed a lot. The old years of, work through it just don't exist. We are preparing dancers to speak in all the slightly different, I call them dialects of the language of dance. And that puts extra pressure on the bodies. It is not just the classical technique or a classical technique in modern dance. Now it is just joining them with jazz and hip-hop, et cetera, all those influences that make our contemporary dance nowadays. Actually, here between TR Dance and BBT and Virginia Ballet Theatre, we started this idea of hiring dancers that can speak on both languages fluently. So we have a company of 10 that, for the most part, can stand their ground both as professional modern dancers and professional ballet dancers, which is uncommon in the States.
Right, and doubles the chances of getting gigs, right?
Correct, and so those dancers get to be hired for a longer period of time because we're including two seasons.
Oh, sure. Makes perfect sense. Can you give us any kind of a sneak preview of what we'll see when you and Todd bring the company to Indianapolis?
Oh, it's going to be fun. Opposite my dear mentor, Mr. Ho Choi. We're going to be doing two works by Todd and one work by this young crazy Puerto Rican here. Ha ha ha. He's bringing. He has a piece called Sweet Sammy, and it is a trio with all music by Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, fun!
It's a very fun, tongue-in-cheek. We call it a clever game of musical chairs, sense of shifting romance. It's very reminiscent of the Vegas Rat Pack.
Sure.
In its humor and its wit. Todd was the director of the Eric Hawkins Company when he was in New York. So he brings with him that classical technique. Eric was married to Martha.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right.
But he has a special sense of humor that I sometimes envy because I go, oh, my God, I come from the Graham side of things. We are deep. he also has a piece called Heavy Like Weights, and that one is to music of Tom Waits.
Oh, wow.
So it is that raw vocal of Tom Waits. So the movement is very weighty, it's kind of heavy, but it kind of wings at the strangeness of the social interpersonal connections, which is partly what Tom Waits writes about.
Absolutely.
It's very much contemporary and innovative in its style. I'd say sometimes that the movement is a little bit raw and a little bit violent, but at the same time, as a whole, it's very pleasing, and you can call it a little bit of tongue-in-cheek. Because Tom Waits is telling of these things that appear ridiculous, but they are part of society.
Absolutely.
And I'm bringing a trio called Voiced. That one is to the music of Meredith Monk, which is very, it is incredible on the ability of Meredith Monk. But it kind of explores the alienation of the individual, and at the same time, it presents the universality of all our battles.
Todd Rosenlieb dances Ricardo Melendez. DK and Friends will be performed at the IRT April 6th through the 9th.
The Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra is getting some help from Ball State University to bring classical music to a younger crowd. WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer decided to check out the Remix the Symphony event in Fountain Square.
This is not the music one normally hears when visiting a venue in Fountain Square on a Friday night. The DJ tonight is Ball State student McKay Powers. He's spinning tunes from the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra.
The more of the calm ones towards the beginning here, that usually is a typical thing you do. Just start out smaller, then you build your way up.
He and Emily Cornettit are part of a team of Ball State graduate students who are helping the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra get more young people interested in its classical music series.
Going out and talking to people, going out and talking to the audience that they want to connect with and finding out, you know, what kind of art that they value and why they value and how they associate value with things. And then a ton of secondary research, so going out and finding out what other symphonies have been doing to try to solve the same problem, because this isn't a new problem and it's not just a problem that they're having in Indianapolis. I mean, they're having this problem everywhere.
The students are taking part in a course offered by the Ball State University Center for Emerging Media Design and Development. Faith Kellermeyer manages the team.
We teach skills that are unique to our program. We teach design thinking. We teach our students how to work in groups and to problem solve in teams. And so we saw this as a good opportunity to connect those skills to an organization like ISO that's doing great work in the field of arts and sort of best of both worlds for us.
The project is called Remix the Symphony.
We actually have four objectives that we're constantly measuring. So you'll see people tonight sort of like lurking around with clipboards, or maybe you're interviewing people. So we're measuring both things that are easy to see, like we have a promo code we're using, and we know that the more people who use it with the ISO, the more are coming from us. But we're also measuring perspective shifts, and that's really hard to measure, and really the only way you can do it is by talking to people. So we actually have people who are specific testers who interview participants to try and see if we move the needle maybe just a little bit.
That's team member Elise Lockwood.
Everything we do is themed around how you can remix or take classical music and interpret it in your own way. But we didn't want that to be limited just to musicians who take classical music and interpret it in their own musical style. So tonight, we are actually catering it towards writers. So we have classical music playing and a bunch of writing prompts if people want to use them, and we're inviting them to remix classical music into their writing style.
Ball State student Jared Lynch picked up one of those printed prompts, which are small cards with interesting ideas to help spur writing.
My prompt is, you've arrived at a very weird office party. The current music is what is being played. What is office party like? Who's there? What are they wearing? What food is offered? So then I just kind of went with that.
After reading the prompt and listening to the music, Jared put pen to paper.
Okay, so this might be kind of weird. Morty is wearing his goat sweater again. It's usually a sign that this office party will inevitably be a long night. Gwen is in charge of the turntable that's set up on the coffee table, stuck in between all the stained mugs that no one uses or washes, except for the wine benders late at night when we all agree to host an office party. And every time we swear we'll have a sober party. It begins that way, but when Gwen starts playing Debussy, Paul and Everly pulls out a bottle of Glenlivet, and then it all starts again, wasting away our minds with La Mer playing in the background and our landlord screaming at us from the apartment upstairs.
The writing from tonight's event, along with art from another, will be collected and presented as an online magazine at remixthesymphony.org.
WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer reporting on Remix the Symphony, a new partnership between the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra and a Ball State University graduate program. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Later this hour, composer-performer Tyron Cooper. But first, Eat, Drink Indie's Jolene Katzenberger talks with illusionist Taylor Martin about magic, the resurrection of illusions, and a pop-up dinner on Sunday, April 2nd at the former Plow and Anchor site.
Well, I just wanted to talk today about magic. We're kind of looking back at Illusions Restaurant and looking toward an upcoming pop-up dinner that will be featuring magic. So yeah. We are here talking with Taylor Martin. So, Taylor, tell me a little bit about Illusions and how the Magic Restaurant was back in the day.
Well, it was started in 89, and a lot of people who are still in the magic scene were there as the original magicians, Pat Smith and Mark Brandeberry and people like that. And it was a place sort of hopefully that it was going to become sort of like the Magic Castle, but on a more interesting, you know, but local level, using local magicians. And we had some great magicians move here to be in it. Chris Kenner, who is now chief assistant to David Copperfield, was one of the original magicians.
Oh my goodness.
Mike Close, who works for Penn & Teller, he's the talent coordinator for Penn & Teller's Fool Us. Homer, who was the bartender, is now the technical director for, you know, Copperfield. So people would have dinner, and the dinner menu was presented in a magical way. They'd show a bag empty, and the person would reach in, and the menu would come out, and there would be little surprises all during the dinner. And then afterwards, they'd get a close-up magic show, really good close-up magic.
So what was the show like when people were at Illusions? You know, they would order. You know, there was a menu on a magic handkerchief, or something like that.
And then they'd clear the servers would clear, and we would come up and sit down like maybe a little small mat to do our magic on. It'd be cards and coins, or it'd be anything that either close-up or is known in the trade as micro magic, stuff that you just won't see on television or you won't see in most shows like Indie Magic Monthly, which is my show. And it would be anything, you know, it'd be like I would start off usually by singing like a chipmunk and doing a rope trick. Then I would I would put a scarf through their arm and attempt to chop their finger off and then end up with a card trick. You know, so there was your 7 minutes right there. If you had, it was a two top, if it was a four top table, it'd be a little longer. And if the bigger the room, the longer the show was.
So mm-hmm. there was a good reaction then from the audience, from the diners.
Yeah.
So are you anticipating a similar sort of reaction?
Oh, we hope
at
so.
This upcoming pop-up?
We hope so. I think there's 60 seats, and if they're not sold out, they will be. And we went from one night to two nights, and we're doing it on April 1st.
That's
what's a greater day than to have a magic show on April Fool's Day?
Isn't that great? So the first one is April 1st,
with
Chef John Brooks. Right. The second one is April 2nd with Chef Craig Baker.
Great.
Both of them at the Plow and Anchor Space. So there'll be, you know, obviously a good menu from excellent chefs. But what will be like from the magic point of
view? Well, if you see Pat Smith, he usually wears the brightest colored suit you've ever seen in your life, and it could be anything from orange to chartreuse. And he walks around, and he'll suddenly be talking to you, and his eyes will bug out, and he'll have a couple ropes around his neck, and he'll pull the ropes through his neck. He'll do some of the best card magic you've ever seen. Ryan Siebert's the same. I'm going to sing like a chipmunk at least once. And,
okay.
You know, Christmas time is near. And so we'll go from there with all that stuff. And I think the reaction will be that people, if they were at Illusions, they'll feel like they're back there again. If they didn't go to Illusions and they always wanted to, they'll get a feel of what it was like.
Well, see, that's what I'm hoping, because I hope to get there. And so I was wondering if we would get that feel of the original restaurant.
Yeah, if people are having fun with us, we'll have fun with them. If they're going to give us a hard time, we'll have fun with them.
Still, right?
I'm going to bring all my standard stuff that people know me for. And then if we do plan to do something afterwards, I'll maybe bring somebody up and put a sword through their neck or something like that. The Chinese linking rings will probably come out too. People know me for my ring routine, which is one of the oldest magic tricks we know about.
Oh, my goodness. So this is going to be a real magic
show. Oh, it's real magic. Oh, yeah.
In addition to an awesome dinner, this is going to be a pretty awesome magic show.
Oh, yeah. The three of us, I think our joy is in magic. And magic is the oldest documented performing art form. It goes back 5,000 years.
You can hear Jolene Katzenberger's Eat, Drink, Indie Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2, The Point.
The American Pianists Awards takes place on April 7th and 8th, and in the week leading up to it, all five of the finalists will be in Indianapolis performing as part of the Discovery Series. Indianapolis-based American Pianists Association sponsors the Classical Fellowship Program, and WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer has been chatting with each of the finalists as they've made visits to Indy earlier this year and last.
We're getting close to the end for them. We're going to have a winner very soon.
Woo-hoo.
Here, Sharon, and it's been really delightful to get to speak with each one of these finalists as we're leading up to it. And Drew Peterson was actually deemed a child music prodigy when he was 5 years old.
Wow.
So he's been exposed. He's only, early 20s now, but he's really been exposed to the public at an early age with his music. And that's one of the things that we talked about, that he has really realized that how important it is for a musician to spend time with the public and make those public appearances. They can really make a difference if you want to be a nationally and internationally known musician.
Yes, yes. This is a big thing. I've been realizing in the past couple years for me, as my career continues to grow, being able to go from being kind of a hermit of sorts and being so self-reflective, so self-analytical, and just being able to have the patience and the kind of, analytical capability to work on our own and continue to refine what we're doing. And then to be able to kind of turn that switch off and switch on this public persona of really doing the exact opposite is sometimes really difficult and very demanding. But it keeps things really interesting. It's really fun to have both aspects of ourselves present in our work every day. I think it's much more exciting than just doing one or the other.
What tools have you found help you to do that, to get out of hermit mode and go into PR mode?
I keep refining my tools every day, I think. But I found recently that being around stimulating people and having great conversations with people around me really helps me to kind of get more outgoing in a way, engage more with people generally, because that's really what it's about. It's about communicating with people. And it's not, I find like the PR thing, I used to think before I was doing this more consistently, you had to, kind of get out of your own skin and be a larger than life persona. You really don't have to be. You just have to be yourself and communicate who you are pretty much just as a person to people. And there's no better way to do that than just talking to people every day. So just relating to people gets me, in that mood, if you will.
Well, you've been the subject of a couple of articles and books about being a prodigy, a musical prodigy. Is that a label that's helped or hurt you? How has it affected you?
It's hard. In a way, it's hard to tell. It's harder for me to tell what it was like to be a prodigy as I was one as a younger kid, because to me, it was kind of just my normal existence was doing music and loving it. And I didn't really see so much of a disconnect between, living real life and kind of doing my music stuff. Now, looking back on it as a 23-year-old, looking back 10, 15 years ago, it was a big job for me to do, to kind of balance my life as a musician, doing all of the concerts and being exposed to the world in such a way and living a normal childhood. But I was very lucky. My parents are very grounded people who, though they encouraged me very strongly to do what I love and made sure that I was doing it to the best of my ability, they never pushed me beyond what I wanted to do. So in that sense, and they always supported me. They're very, very emotionally supportive as well as in all other ways. So in that sense, I had a very holistic kind of, wholesome childhood that was not so affected, I think, by the kind of, musical prodigy labels and everything that goes along with that.
And is part of that being normal that you've been able to develop other interests or hobbies or things that you enjoy outside of playing the piano?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, I've done a lot of academic things in addition to music. I was not one of these kids who was locked in a practice room for hours a day as a kid and kind of left school, blah, blah. I did do things a little unconventionally. I did go to Harvard as a social sciences major, not related to music, for my undergrad. But I did continue practicing my music, and I'm now at Juilliard doing my master's there. So I kind of got back into it much more seriously in the past couple of years. I do also have lots of other interests. As a middle school and high schooler, I was a competitive swimmer. A lot of stuff in that kind of, solo, again, like music, athletic arena, and no contact sports, because very dangerous for our hands. But The swimming was really, really fun because it gave me a very, very motivating kind of thing to do that was totally different from music. But I couldn't keep it up, obviously, is kind of a thing. Swimming and piano get so intense as you get higher up in your skill level and when you want to start competing. So I had to kind of make a choice. And I do still swim, love to swim recreationally, but it's not a competition for me. Piano is enough of a competition.
And you can hear Drew's performance. We're going to play it this Sunday night at 7 p.m. That's Sunday the 26th. And you want to make sure that you listen to that. And once again, the Discovery Series starts April 3rd through the 7th, and then the Gala Finals the 7th and the 8th. Reminding you that the Discovery Series, there will be a free concert every day at noon featuring all five of the finalists. And this, Sharon, this is the first time they're actually all going to be together in town at the same time. So it's an exciting time for all those young men.
What a treat for all of us who love to listen to music. Yeah.
Plenty to do if you want to watch and listen to the Discovery Series the weeks of the 3rd through the 7th of April. But I think we have a couple of other things to suggest before then.
I think we do. I think it's time for our calendar that we call
What'll We Do?
Well, I have two words that you don't always associate together, poem and comedy. Hmm. There's going to be a poem comedy event for the Julian Center at the Fountain Square Brewery on April the 15th. So file your taxes and then go reward yourself by going to this fun event. And it features talent from all across the country, including a National Poetry Slam haiku champion, and including some local folks, including Matt Panful, who's done all sorts of great artistic things in Fountain Square. Again, it's a poem comedy event for the Julian Center at the Fountain Square Brewery on April 15th.
It's taking place right now through April the 2nd, so head down to Garfield Park to the conservatory because it's the Gnome Away From Home exhibit. And Indie Parks does this every year, and they have gnomes, and they position them, and they're playing games. They're doing very interesting things. There's even a little scavenger hunt.
As gnomes do.
It's a fun thing for the entire family down at the conservatory in Garfield Park, 10 to 5, Monday through Saturday, and then Sundays from 1 to 5, too. Won't cost you very much money to get in, and worth the time and the adventure to go home with a gnome, to go away from home and see a gnome.
It feels like
I just like to say gnome.
Apparently you do. I think we need to send you to Alaska. It sounds like a fun thing to take kids to as well and keep them busy to see if they can spot all the gnomes.
Yes.
So you have gnomes. I have 5-foot by 5-foot brain sculptures. It just because. And they are part of a project at Butler University, which has dedicated its school year to brains. It's called One Butler, the Brain Project, and it's culminating a culmination of a series of presentations exploring brain development, brain anatomy, mental health, traumatic brain injury, concussion, memory, Alzheimer's disease, and so on and so forth. There will be 12 of these 5-by-5-foot brain sculptures that have been positioned in various places around campus, but from noon to 1 on March 29th, they'll all be together in front of Clues Memorial Hall in what's being labeled as the celebration of the brain. So I see lots of selfie opportunities. Take a picture of yourself with a brain sculpture or all 12 of them.
On Friday, March the 31st, at the Rathskeller downtown, Nashville recording artist Caitlin Baker is coming to town. She has been deemed as one of the top 10 country artists to watch in this new year. And she sings a lot of folk music, and she's actually been in some of the PBS concert series that pay homage to that line of music. And she will be at the Rathskeller on the 31st for one night only. So head and check their website for tickets and performance times.
There's a local woman named Jenny Montgomery Henderson, and she was doodling one day, and it turns out she was doodling on top of some artwork representing Disney characters, like Disney princesses and the Little Mermaid. And all of a sudden she realized that what she was doing was transforming these somewhat traditional female characters into kind of smart, strong, superhero-type women. And so she collected these pieces of artwork, and she's doing a First Friday exhibit. It's kid-friendly. It's one night only, 5 to 9 on Friday, April 7th at 924 Shelby Street. The pieces are not for sale. It's just a chance to go look at them, get inspired, maybe take the little strong, independent, incipient females in your life to go see this artwork. And talk to the artist, Jenny Montgomery Henderson, Anti-Damsel Drawings, they're called. First Friday, 924 Shelby Street in April.
And if you need to find more things to do, you can do so by going to the indiearts.org/guide. That's the Arts Council of Indianapolis's very complete listing of arts around the city. And if that doesn't satisfy you, well, we'll be back again next week, won't we, Sharon?
We will, with our calendar we call What'll We Do? Maybe with more gnomes.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. In just a bit, Indiana's modern equivalents of William Forsythe and Marie Goth. If you've watched any of the locally produced documentaries on WFYI Public Television, then you've probably heard the music of WFYI's March Small Studio Session performer. Tyron Cooper is an Emmy Award-winning composer and assistant professor in the Department of African American Studies at IU Bloomington. And WFYI's Melissa Davis and Jill Dittmeyer put together this compilation of Cooper's words and music.
All right, babies, let's make it real funky.
Well, the music that I create is about life. It's about lived experience. So it's about what I've experienced. It's about what I've observed others experience. It's about the experience of collective of not only my own community, the nation, but also just broadly speaking, humanity, the types of things that people go through.
Here we go, baby.
It's been a long time since I saw you.
So I write about what I observe in life and just try to tell the story as best as I can.
The last time I heard your voice, 4 years ago. Since then I've been sleeping in a dungeon.
The healing song, it's kind of going around full circle because the healing song kind of started off as something improvisatorial. Once I recorded it, of course, you got to kind of be true to form when you're thinking about maybe, you know, if the song is going to get played on the radio or if you're thinking about people actually singing the song, they have to be able to identify a certain format, a certain sequence. And so I did that in the actual recording. But when I perform it live, I'll give you a solid verse of the recording and maybe a hook or a chorus, as they call it. And then I just kind of see where the song takes me. What can take the place of violence in this world? Hallelujah. Hallelujah. What can bring healing to every man, woman, boy, and girl? Hallelujah. The band that I'm traveling with right now, these guys, I think collectively probably got about 40 years under their belt of just engaging music. And they bring all that to the table. What I think the most important they bring, though, is the level of maturity and enthusiasm for interpreting what I mean when I wrote it.
I feel good, babies.
Write music. When I perform music, I perform me, and I'm so many different people. I like jazz, I like classical, I like Brazilian music, I like the blues, I like rock, I like so many different styles of music. I like sounds of nature. I try to throw all of that into the kitchen sink and come up with essentially who I am.
Let us reason. Reason. Let us reason. We should talk more to each other. We should talk more to each other.
Melissa Davis and Jill Dittmeyer created this segment honoring composer and performer Tyron Cooper. Each month, WFYI showcases a local performer or musical group in its small studio session, which can be seen and heard on the WFYI website at wfyi.org/small-studio. Indiana Artists was founded as Indiana Artists Club in 1917 by 46 people we now recognize as luminaries of the early Indiana art scene. The group included T.C. Steele, William Forsyth, Marie Goth, and many more notables. Though the organization recently changed its name to Indiana Artists, their goals are still the same, to celebrate and heighten the profile of artists throughout the Hoosier State. To that end, their annual Spring Juried Exhibition opens April 7th at the Indianapolis Museum of Art's Brett Waller Gallery. I invited board members April Willie and James Hubbard in to learn about the organization and the exhibition.
Remind me of why this organization was founded and maybe some of the artists who started it.
Of course. It was founded in 1917 by the likes of T.C. Steele, Marie Goth, Otto Stark, several of the other Nashville artists, and it was originally called the Indiana Art Group and Art Club, pardon me, and later was changed to the Indiana Artist Club to better facilitate artists. I think originally they felt like it was seen as more of a patron group or general people interested in art, not necessarily artists. Then the name was changed to the Indiana Artists Club, and that remained for 98 years.
Wow.
Until just recently, we decided to change the name to Indiana Artist.
Club seemed a little too insider, or?
We thought maybe it was seen as hobbyist and not as established professional artist.
Sure.
A little provincial, I think.
Yeah. So 1917 is really, while it's not that long ago in terms of the country, it is a long time ago in terms of Indiana putting itself on the map nationally. Was that part of the original goal?
Yes, I believe so. They were, the group was instrumental in bringing the Hoosier Salon from Chicago to Indiana because there was such a large group of Indiana painters and them wanting to get recognized.
So you this is how do you become a member of Indiana Artists? So we should start there.
James, do you want to take that?
Sure. Well, we have a jury process. You need to fill out an application with your bio and an artist statement and documentation that you have participated in at least three juried art exhibitions. And those exhibitions have to have out-of-state jurors. And so you provide the Indiana Artists jury with that information, with that documentation. And then we set up several days throughout the year that you can bring in actual work as it would be presented in an exhibition. And we have a jury of three professional artist members that jury the work. And we talk about composition, color, style, and the professional look of your work. And then on that day after the jury, the artist is notified of acceptance or non-acceptance.
And is there a cap on the number of artists at any given time who can be involved, or is it more?
No,
is it broader than that?
It's broader than that. In fact, we are pushing for more members. Right now, we have 150. So it's a great group of established artists. But we're also trying to encourage emerging artists and younger artists. You know, we want this historic group to continue. So there's no better way to do that than to encourage younger people to apply.
Yes, I wanted also to mention that we're a diverse group, that we work in all kinds of media.
I was curious about that because you're painter and printmaker here in the room.
Right. And we don't have too many sculptors, and that's an area that I would really like to beef up. I'd like to see more sculptors jury into our group.
We do have probably 5 to 10 at this point, but that's a very small percentage.
Mm-hmm. So sculptors, perk up your ears and pay attention. We'll teach, let you know how to get in touch shortly. So as an artist, what is the benefit of belonging to a group like this?
Well, you get great exposure. Our upcoming show at the Indianapolis Museum of Art coming up in April is fabulous exposure for artists. Unfortunately, a small percentage gets in the show. It is a juried show by a national juror, but it is prominent, and 44 artists will get great, great exposure. But we have other exhibitions throughout the year, workshops to help the artist in all different areas. So there are many benefits, and networking, of course.
We have two other shows during the year. Besides the IMA show in the spring that's juried, we have a INA board exhibition in June that'll be held at French Blue Gallery in Carmel, and that's just for board members. And we're also considering adding past presidents' work in that show, so that be looking for that on your calendar, on your arts calendar. And we also have the Members Open Show in the fall. And this year we'll be having that show at the Nashville Gallery, Brown County Art Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
sorry,
Brown County Art Gallery in Nashville.
It was just renovated, and it's hard to remember what it's called.
It's a beautiful venue.
Space. Yes.
Beautiful space.
Is that show adjudicated, or is it open to all members?
It's open to all members, but it is juried for awards.
Okay, great.
So there are monetary awards given at both our exhibitions.
And I was curious, you've just kind of answered this. It's hard when you're based in the state capital running a statewide organization. Sometimes it's hard to scoop up people around the state. How do you do that? By making sure you rotate where shows are?
Yes. The member show does change venues all over the state. And we are trying to attract members from the far north part of the state and the southern part. We have a few, but we are going to do a push to try to encourage more artists to apply.
In 2016, we held the member show at the Art Museum of Greater Lafayette, and the year before that, it was at Minnetrista in Muncie. So we move that open member show around every fall so that different communities can be exposed to the INA artists.
How do you look at the artists from a century ago who founded this organization? Do you ever kind of look to them for inspiration?
That's a good question. I think maybe our traditional artists perhaps do that a little more. Like James said, we are a very diverse group, from traditional painting to very abstract sculpture and printmaking and painting. I think we can all learn, all artists can learn, you know, from those who preceded us. So there's something to learn in all areas.
Yes, there's a wide variety of styles within the group also, ranging from traditional to contemporary, abstract, non-objective, as well as all medias. So, and I think speaking to legacy, I see my involvement, and I'm sure probably April does too, as being a continuum. My involvement is a continuum of that legacy within the really vibrant art scene in central Indiana, well, within Indiana as a whole. For those that are unfamiliar with the art community, there is a very vibrant art scene here.
Indiana Artists Board members April Willey and James Hubbard. Their 85th annual Spring Juried Exhibition opens April 7th at the Indianapolis Museum of Art's Brett Waller Gallery, and it continues through June 4th. Every week, a Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long talks five songs with someone from our community. Here's this week's journey.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto. I'm joined today by Raquel, a Portuguese language instructor based here in Indianapolis. Raquel, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Kyle, for having me here.
And if folks want to know more about the language services you provide, your website is shotofportuguese.com.
Yes.
And what is the significance of that name?
This name came when I was listening to a song, Isso Aqui É Pouquinho de Brasil. So I wanted to put it in Portuguese, but then, well, I'm in America, so I had to find another name. And it, actually, the site would be, it's just that, a little bit of information about Brazil and about Portuguese, so it's pretty quickly. This is the idea.
And Raquel, you're from Brazil, and I'm a big fan of Brazilian music and culture, so I invited you here to share some music. And Raquel, you have five songs to share with us today. What is your first song for us?
So my first song is O Baile Betinha. I choose the Banda Edge version because I really think it sounds like samba, and samba is one of my, it's in my heart, you know, it's in my blood. So yeah, this one is really good though. Sapato bem com fino, paletó de linho, o grande baile eu vou dançar. Betinha, vem cá, vem cá, vem cá, lalaya. Sapato bem com fino, paletó. The second one is Tim Maia, a classic. Well, I was thinking about all the cities that I know in Brazil, and this one represents Rio very well.
And what's the song?
Oh, Que Beleza. Sorry.
Oh, that's one of my favorite songs. And Tim Maia was a very popular soul singer, like an R&B singer in Brazil. And this album he made when he joined a cult where he thought they were going to go into outer space and the aliens were going to come to Rio de Janeiro and pick them all up and take them to the outer space, right? Is that right?
Yeah, you know, that's it. It's kind of crazy what, if you listen to the lyrics, but the song is so good. You kind of feel the vibe that you go with him, you know, you travel with him.
You travel to space with
him. You travel with him, yes. Third is Trem Azul, Clube da Esquina.
Yes, Milton Nascimento, right?
Yeah.
And why did you pick this song?
This is so silly, but this song is the one that I sing to. I babysit some kids here, and this song is the one that I sing to them when they go to sleep.
It's a lullaby. Yeah.
It's
a very beautiful song.
It is. Coisas que a gente se esquece de dizer, frases que o vento vem às vezes me lembrar. It's worth it. It's Clara Nunes, Feira de Mangaió. And this one I choose especially because of the melody. Sivuca is such a great
accordion.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Sinfonista. And it's just, I love the melody. And I love Clara Nunes. Fumo de rola, reio de cangaia. Eu tenho pra vender quem quer comprar. Bolo de milho, broa e focada. Eu tenho pra vender quem quer comprar. Final one, it's Criolo, of course.
Oh, good.
So I'm from São Paulo. I had to choose something from São Paulo. So I choose Criolo Grajaú X. This is one of the biggest neighborhoods in Brazil. Kind of heavy there, but all of my friends live in there, so I have a very, very sentimental connection with this place. And Criolo, when I saw him singing this song first time, it was really incredible.
Our guest today has been Raquel, a Portuguese language instructor here in Indianapolis. If you want to learn more about the language services Raquel provides, you can go to shotofportuguese.com. And as we go out today, do you want to teach folks, teach us a cool way to say goodbye in Portuguese? Not the formal way. Tell us, like, if we're on the streets in Sao Paulo, what's the cool way to say goodbye?
Falou.
Falou.
Até mais. Até mais.
Thank you, Raquel.
Yeah. Thank you.
Here, Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Wednesday nights at 9 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today's contributors included Melissa Davis and Jill Dittmeyer. You can hear The Art of the Matter Saturday mornings at 7 or join us Thursday nights at 9 after Indivisible. And remember, you can always listen to and share our podcast at WFYI.org. Next week, Wes Rutenberg launches a new album, and Italian POWs build a chapel at Camp Atterbury. And of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All of that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.